A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the U-Military's quasi-airline, the network that moves personnel around the globe during routine peacetime. How extensive is that global network? And outside of wars and emergencies, how many flights does it actually take to keep a force of 1.3 million people rotating through 800-plus bases in 80-plus countries? The short answer is, it's bigger than most commercial airlines you've ever flown.
Military operates a passenger airline larger than Delta's entire international operation. The Air Mobility Command, AMC, moved 4.2 million passengers in fiscal year 2025. That's not a typo. 4.2 million.
That's more people than live in Los Angeles.
Here's the part that surprises people. 1.8 million of those were routine rotations. Just the regular churn of personnel moving between assignments, going to training, returning from overseas postings. The boring stuff.
The boring stuff is the whole story, really. Everyone pictures C-17s doing dramatic combat landings on dirt strips. Most of the time, they're flying a bus route from Delaware to Germany.
So let's start with what the Air Mobility Command actually is. AMC is one of the Air Force's major commands headquartered at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois. It has three core missions: airlift, moving people and cargo, air refueling, and aeromedical evacuation. Today we're focused on the airlift piece, specifically the passenger side.
The quasi-airline label. That's not a metaphor someone dreamed up for a think tank paper. That's how it actually operates.
It really is. The heart of this is the 618th Air Operations Center, the Tanker Airlift Control Center, also at Scott. They function exactly like an airline operations center. They have dispatchers, route planners, scheduling software, weather desks, diplomatic clearance teams. On any given day, they're managing more than 300 flights globally. 80% of those are what's called channel missions, scheduled, published routes that run on timetables. The other 20% are Special Assignment Airlift Missions, SAAMs, for urgent or one-off requirements.
There's literally a flight schedule you could look up.
It's not publicly posted the way Delta's is, but yes, channel routes have published frequencies and departure times. Dover Air Force Base to Ramstein Air Base in Germany is a daily flight, 365 days a year. That's called the Atlantic Bridge Route. A C-17 leaves Dover every single day with 50 to 100 passengers and their luggage, and it comes back the next day with people rotating home.
The Atlantic Bridge. Sounds like something from the Berlin airlift era.
The naming conventions are very mid-century. There's also the Pacific Express. That's a thrice-weekly C-17 from Travis Air Force Base in California to Yokota Air Base in Japan, with a stop at Hickam in Hawaii. 80 to 120 personnel per flight. These routes have been running for decades, just with different aircraft over the years.
Let's get into the fleet, because I think people assume the military's passenger fleet is just cargo planes with jump seats bolted in.
Partly true, but it's more sophisticated than that. AMC operates about 1,200 aircraft total. Of those, roughly 200 are dedicated to the passenger movement mission. The workhorses are the C-17 Globemaster III that can carry about 100 passengers in airline-style seats that fold down from the walls, plus cargo pallets on the same flight. The C-130 Hercules handles shorter routes and smaller airfields, carrying around 60 to 90 passengers. Then you've got the dedicated passenger jets, the C-40, which is a militarized Boeing 737, and the C-37, which is a Gulfstream V for VIP transport.
The C-5 Galaxy is the monster of the fleet.
The C-5 can carry 73 passengers and 36 cargo pallets simultaneously. That's the thing commercial airlines can't do. A Boeing 777 can carry 300 passengers but no military cargo. When you're moving an entire unit, soldiers, their equipment, their vehicles, you need both people and pallets on the same aircraft. That's why the C-17 and C-5 exist.
How many flights per day are we talking for routine personnel movement?
The 618th AOC manages over 300 flights daily across the entire AMC fleet, but not all of those are passenger flights. Many are cargo-only or refueling missions. For passenger-specific channel routes, we're looking at roughly 80 to 120 scheduled flights per day moving personnel around the world. That's the peacetime baseline.
80 to 120 flights a day, just to keep the rotation going. No wars, no emergencies.
And that number can double during a major exercise or a rotation like the one we saw in 2023 when the 1st Armored Division moved from Fort Bliss, Texas to Germany. That was 4,500 soldiers moved via 45 CC-17 flights over 10 days. Total cost, $6.75 million. The commercial equivalent would have been $8.2 million.
The military actually saves money doing it themselves for large unit moves.
In many cases, yes, but not always, and that's where the cost picture gets interesting. A C-17 costs about $24,000 per hour to operate. A single transatlantic channel flight runs between $150,000 and $200,000. The total AMC budget for fiscal year 2025 was $12.8 billion, with roughly $4.2 billion of that spent on passenger movement specifically.
The natural question is, why not just use commercial airlines? Put soldiers on United or Delta and call it a day.
The Fly America Act requires U carriers for official government travel, so they're already limited to American Airlines. But beyond that, there are several reasons. First, as I mentioned, military moves often require simultaneous movement of personnel and equipment. You can't check an armored vehicle as baggage on United. Second, many bases are in locations where commercial airlines simply don't fly. You're not getting a Delta flight into Bagram or even some of the smaller bases in Europe and the Pacific.
The hub-and-spoke model.
Military has more than 750 bases in over 80 countries, but only 30 to 40 of those are major airlift hubs. Ramstein in Germany, Yokota in Japan, Hickam in Hawaii, Dover and Travis and McGuire in the United States. Those handle about 70% of all passenger traffic. The other 600-plus bases are spokes, served by smaller aircraft like C-130s or C-27s that feed into the hubs.
You fly into Ramstein on a C-17 from Dover, then catch a C-30 to some smaller base in Eastern Europe. It's basically the military equivalent of flying through Atlanta.
That's exactly the right analogy. And it's scheduled that way deliberately. The channel route system has two specific programs worth mentioning, Palace Guard and Palace Express. Palace Guard handles permanent change of station moves, PCS, when a service member and their family relocate for a new assignment. Palace Express covers temporary duty rotations, TDY, where someone goes somewhere for a few weeks or months and comes back.
Sounds like something involving bearskin hats.
The naming is wonderfully opaque. But these programs are essentially the military's version of a frequent flyer program, minus the miles. They guarantee a certain number of seats on scheduled routes, and unit commanders can book their people onto those flights through a system that looks a lot like any corporate travel portal.
Let me see if I have the scale right. We're talking about a network that moves nearly 2 million people a year on routine rotations, using roughly 200 aircraft on published schedules through a hub-and-spoke system managed by an operations center that functions like an airline dispatch. And this is just peacetime. This is the baseline.
That's the baseline. And it's worth emphasizing that this network is the invisible backbone of everything people think of as military power. When you hear about rapid deployments or forward presence, what you're actually hearing about is the output of this logistics system. Without the channel routes, without the 618th, without the routine flights, the entire structure of global force projection collapses.
That's the thing about logistics. It's boring until it isn't, and then it's catastrophic.
The misconception most people have is that military flights are always something dramatic. They see a C-17 at a civilian airport and assume it's a secret deployment or some emergency. The reality is, 80% of AMC flights are channel missions. They're scheduled. They're routine. That C-17 at your local airport is probably just picking up personnel who are rotating home from a normal overseas tour.
The military is basically a logistics company that occasionally fights wars.
I think that's genuinely true. The Department of Defense is the world's largest employer, the world's largest landowner, and, in practical terms, one of the world's largest airlines. And here's where it gets even more interesting. The Civil Reserve Air Fleet.
This is the program where commercial airlines pledge their aircraft to the military.
CRAF, the Civil Reserve Air Fleet, was established in 1951. The basic idea is that commercial airlines volunteer their aircraft to be available for military use during emergencies. In return, those airlines get preferential contracts for peacetime military travel. Currently, 24 airlines participate, with more than 450 pledged aircraft.
The military doesn't even own all the planes it might need. It's got a call option on a huge chunk of the commercial fleet.
That's a perfect way to put it. During the Gulf War, CRAF activated in commercial airlines moved something like 60% of all personnel to the theater. During the 2021 Afghanistan evacuation, CRAF was activated again. These weren't military pilots flying military planes. These were United and Delta and American crews flying their own aircraft into harm's way under military direction.
The line between military and civilian aviation is a lot blurrier than most people realize.
It's practically non-existent in some cases. The CRAF program means that when you board a commercial flight, that aircraft might effectively be part of the military logistics chain. It's just not activated at that moment. And there's a reciprocal relationship, too. The military uses commercial airports constantly. The dual-use airfield concept means bases like Ramstein share runways with civilian operations, and C-17s regularly park next to commercial jets.
We've talked about that on the show before, the legal and infrastructure side of dual-use airfields. But this is the operational side, the scheduling, the logistics, the partnerships.
The economics of it are fascinating. The military constantly does cost comparisons between using AMC aircraft and contracting commercial flights. For large unit moves, as we saw with that first armored division rotation, military airlift can be cheaper. But for individual travel or small groups, commercial is often the better deal. The 618th AOC has an entire cell dedicated to making those calculations in real time.
They're running a pricing desk, essentially.
They're running a pricing desk. They're running a routing desk. They're running a diplomatic clearance desk because overflying countries requires permits. They're running a weather desk. They're running a maintenance coordination desk. It is, in every meaningful sense, an airline.
Let me ask about the network geography, because I think people picture bases as being concentrated in a few places. Germany, Japan, South Korea, maybe the Middle East?
The network is far more distributed than that. Yes, the major hubs are in Germany, Japan, South Korea, Italy, the UK, and the Gulf states, but those hubs feed into a much wider network. Military has a presence in Djibouti, in Niger, though that's been drawn down, in Romania, in Poland, in the Philippines, in Australia, in Singapore, in Bahrain, in Kuwait, in Qatar, in the UAE. And those are just the ones with significant airfields. There are smaller sites all over Africa, South America, and the Pacific.
Each of those needs regular personnel rotation.
Every single one. A small special operations outpost in some country most people couldn't find on a map still needs its people rotated in and out every few months. Those flights might be a C-130 once every 2 weeks, or a contracted aircraft, or a combination. A channel flight to the nearest hub, then a smaller feeder flight to the final destination.
The feeder flights. Are those also AMC, or are those contracted?
It's a mix. AMC operates the C-130s and C-27s that handle most of the feeder routes. But there's also a significant amount of contracted airlift, especially in theaters where the operational tempo is high and AMC assets are stretched. Companies like Atlas Air and Kalita Air fly military contracts regularly, often in aircraft that look like commercial freighters but are operating under military direction.
The network has layers. AMC at the core, CRAF as a surge capability, and then commercial contracts filling the gaps.
That layered approach is deliberate. It gives the military flexibility. In peacetime, you don't need to own all the capacity. You just need to own enough to maintain the routine network and have contracts in place to scale up. The CRAF program means you can triple your passenger capacity within days of an emergency without buying a single additional aircraft.
The military version of cloud computing. You only pay for the servers you need until you need to spike.
That's actually a great analogy. And like cloud computing, the cost structure is complex. The $12.8 billion AMC budget isn't just aircraft, it's maintenance depots, fuel contracts, crew training, base operations, the whole infrastructure. The $4.2 billion spent on passenger movement specifically includes everything from the pilot's salaries to the meals served on the aircraft to the buses that take people from the terminal to the plane.
Are we talking about airline food, but make it military?
On the C-40 and C-37, yes, actual galley service. On a C-17, you're getting an MRE or a boxed meal. The passenger experience varies dramatically depending on the aircraft and the route. A C-17 is loud, the seats are web seating along the walls, and the lavatory is basically a curtained-off chemical toilet. A C-40 is essentially a 737 with nicer legroom. The C-37 Gulfstream is extremely comfortable, but that's for senior leaders and VIPs.
The Palace Guard program for families relocating to Germany. Are they flying on C-117s?
Often yes, and it's not glamorous. Families with small children, pets, all their household goods already shipped ahead, sitting in web seats for 8 hours over the Atlantic with engine noise so loud you need ear protection. It's functional, not comfortable, but it's free to the service member, and that's the point.
Functional, not comfortable. The unofficial motto of military logistics.
That should be on a plaque at Scott Air Force Base. But here's what's impressive. The system works. The on-time rate for channel missions is above 90%. That's comparable to commercial airlines, and they're doing it with aircraft that are also combat capable, flying into airfields that sometimes have minimal infrastructure, in places where the weather data is sparse and the diplomatic overflight permissions are complicated.
90% on time for a network that spans the entire planet, using military aircraft, with all the additional constraints. That's remarkable.
It's a testament to the 618th AOC. These are the people who figure out that if a C-17 has a maintenance issue in Germany, they need to reroute a C-5 from Dover to cover the Ramstein departure. And, oh by the way, that C-5 needs a diplomatic clearance for the overflight of Turkey that wasn't in the original plan, and the crew is approaching their duty day limit.
The crew duty day is a thing for military pilots too?
AMC follows FAI regulations for crew rest plus additional military-specific rules. A C-17 crew can't just fly indefinitely. They have strict limits on flight hours per day, per week, and per month. The scheduling system has to track all of that for thousands of crew members across the globe.
The 618th is managing aircraft, crews, passengers, cargo, weather, maintenance, diplomatic clearances, and cost comparisons, all in real time, for 300-plus flights a day.
They've been doing it with a scheduling system that, until recently, was largely a patchwork of legacy software. That's why the May 2026 announcement of the new Global Reach scheduling system upgrade is significant.
That was the hook that made this prompt timely. What's Global Reach?
It's the next-generation scheduling platform for AMC. The details are still emerging, but the core promise is AI-optimized routing and scheduling. Instead of human planners manually working through options, the system will propose optimized routes, flag potential conflicts, suggest alternatives when disruptions occur, and automatically handle things like diplomatic clearance requests and crew duty day calculations.
It's an AI dispatcher.
And the projections suggest it could reduce costs by 15-20%, which on a $4.2 billion passenger movement budget is substantial. We're talking $600 to $800 million a year in potential savings.
Or they'll just use the efficiency to run more flights.
That's the open question. Efficiency gains in military logistics rarely translate to smaller budgets. They translate to more capacity for the same budget, which, from a readiness perspective, is probably the right outcome. But it means the network will likely get busier, not cheaper.
Which brings us to the Pacific. You mentioned earlier that the distances there are 3 times longer than Atlantic routes.
This is the strategic challenge that's reshaping AMC planning. A flight from Dover to Ramstein is about 4,000 miles. A flight from Travis to Yokota is about 5,000 miles. But the Pacific Theater isn't just Japan. It's Guam, the Philippines, Australia, Singapore, and increasingly more distributed locations across the Indo-Pacific. The distances between potential operating locations in the Pacific are enormous, and the number of suitable airfields is limited.
The hub-and-spoke model gets stretched.
It gets stretched to the breaking point. You can't run a daily C-17 from California to the Philippines the way you can to Germany. The distance is too great, the crew duty day becomes a limiting factor, and you need more tanker support for refueling. The Pacific requires a different operating concept, and AMC has been quietly expanding the Pacific Express routes and adding new channel missions to places like Darwin in Australia and Clark in the Philippines.
These are routine peacetime routes, not contingency plans.
These are routine channel missions running now. The Pacific pivot that people have been talking about for a decade is actually happening in the logistics sphere, even if the headlines focus on ships and missiles. You can't sustain a forward presence without the airlift network to support it.
If someone's listening to this and they live near a civilian airport and they see a gray C-17 on the tarmac, what should they assume?
They should assume it's a channel mission, especially if it's at an airport like Baltimore Washington International or Seattle Tacoma or any major hub near a military base. It's probably picking up or dropping off personnel on a routine rotation. It's not a secret deployment. It's not an emergency. It's the military's version of the 1045 to Frankfurt.
The 1045 to Frankfurt with web seating and MREs.
A 90%+ on-time rate. The boring stuff that makes everything else possible.
That's the real takeaway here. The global military presence that people think of as bases and ships and aircraft carriers. All of that depends on a logistics network that runs on published schedules and cost comparisons and crew rest regulations. It's not glamorous, but nothing works without it.
The scale is staggering when you step back. 4.2 million passengers a year, 300+ flights a day, 750+ bases in 80+ countries. A fleet of 200 passenger aircraft augmented by 450 commercial airliners on standby, $12.8 billion a year. This is, by any measure, one of the largest airlines on Earth, and most people have no idea it exists.
The Department of Defense, the world's largest logistics company that also happens to have an armed division.
I think that's exactly the right framing, and the blurring between military and civilian aviation is one of those things that's hiding in plain sight. The CRAFT program means that when you fly United or Delta, you're potentially flying on an aircraft that's pledged to the military. The dual-use airfields mean the infrastructure is shared. The contracts mean commercial carriers are moving military personnel every single day.
The distinction between military aviation and civilian aviation is more of a spectrum than a bright line.
That's by design. It's a system that was built during the Cold War, refined during the Gulf War, and has been operating continuously ever since. The CRAF program alone is one of the most elegant pieces of defense policy ever created. It gives the military access to massive surge capacity without having to buy and maintain the aircraft during peacetime, and it gives the airlines a steady revenue stream from government contracts.
Everybody wins, except possibly the taxpayer who's paying for both sides of the deal.
The taxpayer is paying either way. The question is whether they're paying for underutilized military aircraft sitting on ramps or for commercial contracts that keep the airline industry healthy and provide surge capacity. The CRAF model is probably the more efficient approach, all things considered.
What's the future of this network? Global reach and the Pacific pivot. What should we be watching for?
I think there are three things to watch. First, how much efficiency does the Global Reach AI scheduling system actually deliver, and does that translate to cost savings or just more flights? Second, how does the Pacific network evolve? Will we see new channel routes to places like Palau or Papua New Guinea as the distributed basing concept expands? And third, will the CRAF program need to be updated for a world where commercial airlines are increasingly stretched and the military's requirements are shifting?
That third one is interesting. If the commercial airlines are struggling with their own capacity issues, does the CRAF program still work as designed?
That's a genuine concern. The airline industry has been through multiple shocks in the last decade, and while they've recovered, the margin for surge capacity isn't what it was during the Cold War. The military may need to own more of its own capacity, or find new partnership models, or both.
The cloud computing model gets expensive when you need to spike, and the provider is also at capacity.
And in the Pacific, where distances are vast and airfields are scarce, the whole model gets stress-tested in ways it hasn't been since World War II. The logistics of the Pacific theater are fundamentally harder than the Atlantic, and that's going to drive changes in how AMC operates.
The network that looks impressively efficient today might be under serious strain in the next decade.
Which is why the Global Reach upgrade matters. It's not just about saving money, it's about being able to squeeze more capability out of the same fleet when the distances get longer and the margins get thinner. If you can optimize routing and scheduling with AI, you might be able to maintain the same level of service across a much more demanding geography without buying a lot more aircraft.
The software upgrade as a force multiplier.
That's the bet. And it's a bet that every major airline is making too, using AI for scheduling, predictive maintenance, route optimization. AMC is essentially following the same trajectory as the commercial industry, just with different paint jobs and a more complicated diplomatic clearance process.
Alright, so to pull this together, the prompt asked how extensive this network is, and how many flights are needed during routine times. The answer is, it's a global airline moving 4.2 million passengers a year, with 80 to 120 scheduled passenger flights per day, just for routine rotations. Managed through a hub-and-spoke system of 30 to 40 major airfields, feeding more than 700 smaller bases, supported by a commercial partnership program that gives the military access to another 450 aircraft on standby.
That's the summary, and the next time you see a gray C-17 at a civilian airport, you'll know. It's probably just the military's version of a commuter flight, running on schedule, moving people from one assignment to the next. The most powerful military on Earth runs on a bus schedule.
The banality of global power projection.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In antiquity, some scholars of the Atacama Desert believe that ice caves formed not from freezing water, but from frozen wind. A theory holding that wind itself could crystallize into solid ice when trapped in mountain hollows for centuries. This was mainstream among certain pre-Inca natural philosophers until roughly 400 CE, when it was quietly abandoned after someone presumably noticed wind does not, in fact, freeze.
That's a new one.
I have so many questions about the peer review process in pre-Inca natural philosophy.
I'm just impressed someone eventually checked.
This has been My Weird Props. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for making this show possible. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. We're Korn and Herman, and we'll be back with another prompt soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.